first of all, if I can ask you, there seems to have been a rather late start to the tornado season in the US, but quite a severe one.
That's correct. We actually have had a fairly quiet spring season. Usually things start at the end of February and peak in April and May, and then tail off fairly quickly in June, at least here on the southern Great Plains. And this year, we did get a few early events, but then March and April were remarkably quiet. In fact, there was some discussion that we were headed for a record year in the sense of no tornadoes. And that all changed very abruptly in the last week or so.
Because it has been a late start to the season, would that indicate that perhaps it will linger for a bit longer?
That's a possibility, and indeed there are people discussing that point, the research staff, right now. Winter lingered long this year, and so that's one of the reasons we didn't get a lot of severe convection across the Great Plains. We were still having near-freezing temperatures right up until the end of April. So a lot of things are seasonally running a little bit behind. So it'll be interesting to see how June plays out.
Is it your expectation, then, that there will be more storms to come?
I think it's pretty clear there's going to be more storms to come. Whether they will reach the intensity levels that we've seen in the last few days, I certainly hope not, but can't discount that possibility.
Is climate change factored into your forecasts when looking ahead and trying to work out just how the season will unfold?
Not really. There is certainly a lot of discussion about what the potential impacts of a changing global climate might be on severe weather, but we don't have a good enough database. We don't have the right statistical tools that would let us say with any degree of confidence that climate change has impacted the occurrence of thunderstorms or not. We can't say either way. If you look at the historical record, which in the U.S. runs back into the 50s for tornado-producing storms, there is a lot of year-to-year variability. And in fact, one of the things that we have been seeing is that there are actually fewer of the most intense-type storms than there were back in the 50s and 60s.
In terms of the topography of the Midwest and what's known as Tornado Alley, could you describe to me how those conditions come together to create, for want of a better way to describe it, a perfect storm in terms of the conditions that are conducive to these sorts of meteorological events?
Yeah, you might say perfect thunderstorm. First of all, the topography is very important. We have the Rocky Mountains to our west, and we have the Gulf of Mexico to our south, and we have Canada as a source region to our north. And so from the Gulf of Mexico, we get warm, moist air. From Canada, we get cold, somewhat dry air, particularly in the flowing south at the mid-levels. And the Rocky Mountains interrupt the flow across the northern hemisphere, producing these big, what we call low-pressure troughs that come off the eastern flank of the mountains that provide sort of the trigger mechanism by perturbing the jet stream. So when you get moist air at low levels, cool, dry air at mid-levels, a high-altitude jet stream that's very strong, and you get what are called wind shear in meteorological terms, the change in direction and speed as you move up in the atmosphere of the winds, if everything lines up right, you can get some really impressive thunderstorms. They can be hail producers. They can be potential rainfall producers. They can produce enormous amounts of lightning. And some of them do it all at one time, and some of them produce tornadoes.
Is that part of the world adequately equipped to protect people from these storms?
I think evidence suggests that we could do a better job. On the other hand, we have done a remarkably better job than we were doing, say, three or four decades ago. If one looks at the number of people killed by tornadoes today in a bad year it's in the 100, 120 range. You don't have to go very many years ago, into the 1950s and 1960s, and we were losing 600 and 700 people a year. And given that our population is about 50 million more people in the U.S. in that period of time, we've made some remarkable strides. At the same time, we know more about how to take protection. And so part of what we're doing now is we actually do a very good job of weather forecasting, anticipating these events, particularly the big and most violent events. They're the easiest to forecast because they have such a huge signature. So the trick is now more of a social problem of getting people to make the right decisions in their lives, in advance of storms, building storm shelters, or at least identifying a storm-safe area in their house, developing a plan, and then reacting properly when the weather service provides the information that storms are about to occur.
You said that it was a social problem there. How do you change someone's mindset and convince them that they're not taking the appropriate precautions?
First of all, education, just raising people's awareness that there are things that they can do, that they're not powerless, that they can take responsibility for their lives and make appropriate investments when they build a new house or retrofit an old house, put a storm shelter in, that we can also get them to support better standards for school construction. Here in the U.S., all public schooling is handled locally. Every detail of it is decided at the local community level, including the way buildings are built. And many of the new buildings are indeed built with new shelter space. But it's very hard to retrofit or very expensive to go back and retrofit old buildings, and we're still using some school buildings that are 70 or 80 years old and consequently really don't provide a great degree of protection. So a lot of it is education. Sometimes we can incentivize things by offering to cover part of the cost of putting in a shelter. It's much easier to get people out of a shelter than to go looking for them if they're dead.
I know that in North Queensland here in Australia, because of the threat of cyclones, that there is a different set of building rules, building standards enforced to ensure that structures can withstand these winds that are 200-300 kilometres an hour. Is it the same, particularly in Oklahoma, where it seems that there are so many of these storms?
We do have some building standards that directly bear on safety of the structures, but they apply basically to building new structures. And older homes, older buildings, don't have to be brought up to meet the new codes unless you do a major renovation. So we have a lot of structures that are legacy from the times when we didn't have that understanding of how to do it. And there's big interest in the insurance companies in getting people to do these sorts of things. So there is a constant effort to try to upgrade by the building codes to get people to have a safer home.
Professor Snow, thanks very much for your time.
I'm glad to do it.